You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
That's right. You're on with Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. We have a very, very great show today. We're going to be talking about literacy. But before we get to that, I want to touch on something that's very near and dear to my heart. And that is we have a party coming up. For those of you that are in Southern California and you would like to come, let us know. You'll be able to call us or email us to be able to come. For those that are not close, but that feel the same passion for this particular charity, go to the website, check it out, see what they're doing. It's pretty incredible. What we have coming up, we have Cajun Vic's 17th annual crawfish boil. This is going to be Saturday, June 27th, from noon to 6. Now that's going to be, it's my home. I'm hosting it only from the standpoint of providing that particular venue. Believe me, this is Vic's party. This is his 17th annual, and he's not called Cajun Vic for nothing. This is a man that puts together some incredibly, incredibly wonderful Cajun food. I've eaten his food, and let me tell you, it is worth it. Not only will there be crawfish, but there's going to be barbecued alligator. And for any of you out there wondering what alligator tastes like, tastes just like crocodile. So anyway, if you have interest, please get in contact with us. You can call Vic at 714-851-6502. Or to learn more about it, you can go to the website for the party, which is www.cajunvic.com/CB. That's Charles Boy. If you want to learn more information about the charity, it's www.refugeerelief. That's refugeerelief.org. To tell you a little bit about this organization, this is a group of people, primarily doctors, that go into the areas where nobody else will go. We're talking about we're going into war zones, and they are helping children. They're operating on children. They're setting up operating rooms for the doctors. They're training doctors and nurses there. You have children that are stepping on landmines or just being caught up in a war zone. They're going in. They're setting up the kind of security that allows them to do this job and to do it well. It is an excellent charity. I really recommend that anybody go to the site, look at it, see what they're doing. It's pretty incredible. Now, what I'd like to do now, I'm going to bring on my guest. Now, I want to tell you that through varied avenues, such as her award-winning Reading is Everything tutorial program, her contributions to educationworld.com as their national reading coach and monthly columnist, our guest today, Kathy Pewitt Miller, spends her time spreading the news that reading can be fun, powerful, and practical. Kathy, welcome to the show. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Alan.
There we go.
It's great to be with you.
Well, for those that that are just now hearing your voice, I had the benefit of hearing it a little bit earlier. You have a wonderful Southern accent, and I think you're just going to make us all feel very calm as you tell us more about literacy. Now, I know that you're known as the Literacy Ambassador. Tell us a little bit about how you came to be involved in this field and why it's so important to you.
Well, Alan, probably the best place to start is the fact that I had a wonderful mom who promoted reading at home, and all three of the children in our family grew up to take very different paths, but we all became readers. And about 1997, I came to a point in my life where I could do something different. And so I took the library science degree that I had, which was my background, and began to find ways to build bridges for children, sometimes through children, sometimes through adults. promoting literacy as a tool for life. So that's kind of where I started. I now have a company called TLA Incorporated, which is an independent literacy consulting firm, and we're really focused on helping children and families across a lot of different perspectives. We work with schools, we work with home and community.
Well, and one of the things that I noticed, too, that I thought was really impressive is that you're working with tutors and you're working with teachers. And I think that is one of the best ways to get the message out, in a much more structured fashion. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, tutors, and we have a lot of different places where tutoring happens. We've got some places like Sylvan where it's a structured tutoring program that's a for-profit business. We have a lot of volunteer tutors coming into schools. And what I found so much is that there's a lot of material for tutors out there, but there's not a lot of talk among tutors about how to motivate children to want to be readers. And because of what's happening in our school systems where we have so much skill-based instruction, we're teaching all the mechanics of reading really well, because probably in the last 30 years or so, we've learned a tremendous amount about how kids learn to mechanically read. Mm-hmm. But sometimes in the midst of all that, we forget that motivation. Why in the world should we want to read anyway? And that is a lot of the focus that TLA takes in whatever projects we're working on.
Well, would you say that because we become such a television-driven, computer-driven society, is that leading kids to believe that they don't need to read as much?
I don't know that it's so much that it's leading them to believe that they don't need to read as much as it's just competition. We are a very visual society. I actually was talking to someone from the University of Colorado the other day who does research on children that are visual spatial learners, and that just means that they learn more by seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
And big picture kind of learners. And we're growing in the number of kids that are identified as that kind of learner because we have so much that is visual in our world today. TVs, video games, computers, all of that. And in fact, the International Reading Association, in their definition of literacy, has actually expanded the term literacy to mean not just reading and writing, which is what you and I probably think of first,
right.
But also listening, communicating, and viewing or observing, because they realize that in that big picture of reading that all those things are in play when we're talking about reading and writing. So they've kind of added on those extra definitions, and I think it's important for parents to think in those terms instead of just reading and writing.
Right. Well, and I would agree. I mean, wouldn't you say that maybe 40 years ago, weren't we much more of auditory learners?
Probably. I think that's probably true, because it was a much quieter world. It was a much less hectic world. And we didn't have as much competition for... I remember when I was growing up as a child in North Carolina, in the summers particularly, there really was not a lot else to do but read, because I grew up in a very small town. But that's not really the case now so much in our society, where we've structured our children's activities for safety reasons and those kinds of things. We have our kids scheduled, and so there's less time for them to really develop what a friend of mine, Betty Carter, calls the behavior of reading, just mm-hmm. the habit of it and making it a part of everyday life. And that's really where your best readers come from, because that's where your readers, it's kind of like layers of an onion or layers, those old-fashioned mm-hmm. candles where you dip in the wick and it comes up and there's a very thin thread of wax on it, and the more you dip it, the thicker the candle
right.
becomes. It's the same thing with developing good reading skills. It takes that layering and that practice. So we have to be, I like the word intentional, we have to be a bit more intentional as parents today in helping our children be strong readers, because there is so much competition.
Well, and yeah, I would certainly agree with that. Now, I think most people probably think that reading is something that you focus on while your kids are really small. And then maybe at that point, or at least maybe the way that I remember it is, you know, and then at that point, it's sort of handed over to the school. You know, how has that changed now? I mean, is there a need more to continue that as we become older readers?
Absolutely, we do. And I'll tell you, Alan, why I think that's most important is, as I mentioned just earlier, it is a layering process, and although the federal government and several other entities have set third grade is when our children should be good readers.
Mm-hmm.
That's really just the beginning of their road, because by that time, hopefully, they are very good decoders. And what I mean by that word is that they can look at a word, and because they know the sounds of the letters, they can figure out what that word sounds like. But there's a whole other gamut of skills in reading that don't really develop completely until much, much later, maybe even on up into high school. And those are things like comprehension, understanding what you read. And that's really the core. You know, that's the heart of why we read anyway. That's why we read as adults.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we want to get something out of whatever those squiggles on the page are. And then also fluency is important. And that may be a term that parents don't know. And they may hear it from teachers and be intimidated and think, oh, I don't even know what that is. But it's really a very simple concept. It's that when children read aloud, that they sound as though they're talking when they read. They have intonation. They have phrasing. They have fluidity to what they read. And then the reason that's so important is because if you read one word at a time,
mm-hmm.
then you lose meaning. It's almost impossible to carry the meaning over unless it kind of models what real speech sounds like. So whether we're doing that aloud or in our head, that silent little voice that we hear, we still need to have that fluidity in order to be able to understand. And then finally, also, vocabulary is just so, so important. And again, your children's vocabulary continues to grow. You don't have your full adult vocabulary. Hopefully, we're still growing
right.
our vocabulary as adults. So you don't have your full vocabulary at third grade. So all those other areas still need support from families. But what I see so much going on is that families kind of are lost. They say, well, my child knows basically how to read, so I really don't have to do anything with them in that area anymore. And what that really does is pull the whole support system out from under that child, and that's why we see a lot of children move away from reading once they leave that snuggle and cuddle stage, as I call it, where you can sit down close beside them and read picture books and interact very
right.
closely. And because of the development of our children, you know, honestly and correctly, they don't want to be right in that close snuggling cuddle stage anymore
mm-hmm.
by the time they get to third
well,
grade or so.
I mean, I certainly agree with that. And being a former room parent, I ran into that with a lot of the parents that I was dealing with, and I would not only go over with the kids what our next reading assignment was, and I would help them, but when I would meet the parents, I would talk to them. And it was amazing to me how many parents had the thought process that said, isn't it the school's responsibility now? I mean, they're in second grade, you know, isn't it their responsibility?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you run into that as a problem as well?
I do. And I think that the key there is what we were talking about just a few minutes ago when we were talking about that whole experience of the mechanics of reading. Any of your families that have been in schools know how tight the rigor of the structure of the schedule is. You know, we're doing 10 minutes here and then we've got to go and do a block here and a block here. There's not a lot of time for nurturing that behavior and that habit and that pleasure side of reading. And we are creatures, as human beings, of pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to do more the things that make us feel good. We tend to avoid the things that make us feel bad. And children aren't any different.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want them to have that regular practice time with reading, I believe that's the key role for parents today, is to be the motivator, to be the cheerleader, to be the person that, perhaps transparent to the child, make sure that that child has opportunities to read and time set aside, maybe just peaceful out in the hammock in the backyard time or in the car going on errands time. Or there are lots of different places to find where you
right.
can set aside some time for your child to get that daily dose of reading.
Right. And you know what I hear you saying is as parents, we should be modeling it as a pleasure experience, not something that you have to do because it's a school requirement.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you something that Jim Trelease is the author of the Read Aloud Handbook, and one thing that Jim says that I just love, he says, what we teach our children to love and desire will always outweigh what we teach them to do. And I love that quote, because what he's saying in terms of reading is that you want a child who reads outside the classroom. You want a child that keeps reading once they get out of school. If you can give them that carrot that says, oh, this is something good to do, and that keeps being supported throughout their lives, then that child is going to be a lifelong learner. You know, that's a bigger picture than a lifelong reader, but that's definitely a part of it. And as a, on a personal note, we have, my husband and I have a 19-year-old now who had a rich environment in that regard when he was little. We read to him. We talked to him a lot. We did all the things that you need to do before he was a reader. But he still, as a young man, chooses to read recreationally, and he reads very, very broadly. And I don't think that's because I'm a literacy consultant. I think that's because I was an involved parent that gave him space to read, stuck Sports Illustrated in front of his nose at the breakfast table, and said, hey, look at this. Read this article about Kobe Bryant or whatever it was, and kept him involved in seeing reading as that connecting to something that meant something to him instead of just being an academic exercise that he had to do when he was in school. And that's what I would say to families. You know, try to get out of that academic box, because if when they get to be teens, for sure, forcing is not going to be very effective.
Well, and I agree, and that's why I now have boys whose one gets motocross magazine and reads it cover to cover, or surfing magazine, or skateboarding magazine, or BMX bicycle magazine, and then I've got another one that gets everything military. So,
well, see, that's great, because you know what, Alan, you've done a wonderful thing that every parent can do. You know what your child's passion is. And if we can connect something they already feel great about with a way to get more information about it, and most of the time that's through text, where we're talking about books, or we're talking about magazines, or we're talking about the Internet. You know, all those are text-based still. Then we're going to start to see that intrinsic interest come from them and not just be imposed on by us.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Now, as I was going through your website and checking out some things, one of the things that I saw, but I read that picture books aren't just for little kids anymore. Tell me a little bit more about that and how they're being used.
Oh, good. That's an excellent opportunity. And do you mind if I mention my website name?
Well,
that might be something that people might want to go and visit.
Well, and absolutely, I want you to mention it. And I was going to, after you told us a little bit about it, I was going to go right into, now, for those of you, you know that there's a lot more information there, so to go to it. So, yes, please do.
Okay.
Mention it now and mention it at the end.
It's a very easy URL. It's readingisforeveryone, spelled out, .org. And one of the reasons that I'm talking about that right now is that high school teachers are telling me that they are using picture books in their classrooms, not as something that makes the kids feel like, oh, this is baby stuff, but when their children don't have, when their students, in the teacher's case, don't have a lot of background knowledge about something they're getting ready to study, maybe in history or maybe in music or some other area of what the teachers call content area learning, which is all the subject stuff outside of math and reading. Often we need a palatable way for those kids to be able to kind of get some basis, because, you know, if you're talking about the Civil War, for instance, that's so far away from our children's experiences that it's hard for them to relate, and when they can't relate, they're probably not going to be doing much but learning facts.
Right.
We want them to really get a concept of what that time in history was and what it meant and what it means to us today and all those things. So a good example, I just was at the International Reading Association conference in Minneapolis, Minnesota this past month. And there's a wonderful author that many of your parents may know from picture books with children named Patricia Polacco.
Okay.
And she has written a terrific picture book, but I would not read it to a four-year-old because it has some very intense graphic information in it about the Underground Railroad and about slavery in the times before the Civil War. But it is a picture book format. And so that would be a perfect opportunity when a teacher's teaching about the Underground Railroad, to use that as an introductory way to kind of build some background knowledge, get the kids so they kind of understand real characters and real people that lived in that time, and then they're going to be able to understand the content behind that time and what in history she's trying to teach them so much better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, to what degree is this now being used, like in middle schools and high schools?
It is still a growing thing. I would not say the majority of teachers do it. But what I've seen is that there is a real emphasis in middle and high school among content learning teachers, and that's the science and the math and the history and all those other subject area teachers, to find ways to help their students get the basic understanding of what was going on at that time. Or, for instance, in science, they might read a picture book about Albert Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that they could get an idea, a place to start in building their knowledge in that subject area. And actually, for parents and also for teachers and librarians, I've recently put together a book that's in ebook format that is 180 of those kinds of picture books connected to different parts of content area learning, so that it's a resource they can go to and see books that will relate to those different common subject areas that are being taught and can help. And even if the vast majority of students in their class, maybe it's an AP history class in high school, or maybe it's an upper level high school history class, maybe there are students in there that have a good grasp. They know what they need to know to jump right into the content. But you have some students that are on that lower level that just don't have a clue about that time in history. Then using these as supplementals can be a wonderful thing to kind of help bring those students up to where the other students are.
Well, and I saw that too, the 180 resources. And in fact, I'm going to get it. That's how much
great.
I looked at. I'm going to get it. But I mean, it seems like that would be great for teachers. How can teachers or parents get that particular book on powerful picture books?
It's really very easy. I'm in the process, actually, of getting a link put on my website, but in the meantime, they can go right to the publisher's website, and that's inspiringteachers.com. Inspiring Teachers is a wonderful group of former teachers who have gotten together and decided that one of the things they want to do is put ready resources, practical, ready-to-go-into-the-classroom ideas together for teachers. And so my book is listed in their catalog under the ebooks. I think it's actually the featured item right now. And the name of it is Powerful Picture Books, 180 Ideas for Promoting Content Learning. And it's really an annotated list, Alan, of picture books. Actually, what I suggest for elementary school teachers is that since it's 180, that's how many school days we normally have for most children. So if they start at the beginning of the list and read all the way through, think about all the background knowledge in areas like music and art and history and science. They're going to be able to build for those students before they get to those content areas in math and history, in high school and middle school. And then for those teachers that are in those upper levels, again, they have those tools to bring in if their students need to build background knowledge in that particular area. And we've had researchers tell us that if we give adequate background knowledge, kind of a hook, something for a student to grab hold of and say, okay, I understand this, now take me to the next level, their learning is much, much better.
Well, and I noticed now, how many of them, again, was for like the middle and high schoolers? Because I think there was still quite a few of them, and I don't remember the exact number. What was it? 40?
Yes, there are. I would just say off the top of my head, probably about nearly half of them are applicable for middle and high school, and I actually have a legend in there so that the teachers or parents or librarians, whoever's looking at the book, can go in and see which ones are applicable for which levels. And actually, Inspiring Teachers has done a great thing in moving it to the ebook format. I don't know how many people listening are familiar with ebooks, but they're wonderful because they come as an interactive PDF.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is you buy the book, you download it from an email that they send you when they acknowledge that they've received your order, and then you can scroll from page to page just like you would flip the pages of a book. But there's a bookmark index that can pop up on the side, and then it becomes interactive because you can go, if you have a middle school student, you can go and either look at all the books that apply for middle school, pop onto that label, and it'll list all the titles for you. And then you can pop on the individual titles, and it'll take you to the page in the ebook that has that title on it. And then you can also do that by subject matter or topic. So if you wanted to look at art or history or animals or, you know, whatever subject you wanted to use those as a vehicle to teach, you could find them by subject matter without having to scroll through all 180 books.
Right. Yes, and you can also do it, like, for instance, on your iPhone. What I do with the ebooks that I have, and especially ones like this that's a great resource, is I can download it from my computer right onto my iPhone. So now I've got it on my iPhone. So if I think of something, and I can be anywhere in the world, I just pop it on, look at my iPhone, and go, oh, yeah, that's one, and I can flip right through it, just as you said. So it's an excellent resource that can go with you anywhere.
Well, and we love that about ebooks. That I remember Emma McDonald is the lead editor there at Inspiring Teachers, and she has just done a wonderful job of putting materials in the hands of busy parents and teachers by using that particular format, that ebook format, because it is so quick and easy to use. We're being eco-friendly, you know, friendly to the environment, because we're not printing out reams and reams of paper in order to produce this. And so I was very excited to have this venue in which to address some of these needs that we were seeing in being able to use an ebook format.
All right. Well, you know, I also noticed that we have, that with you being a columnist, I had a chance to go through some of your columns. This is the last week of school, at least here in California, and we're coming up on summer. I don't know about anybody else, but we tend to lose some ground in my household come summertime, as far as the getting the reading done that we want to get done each night. I noticed that you did a piece on your column that was called Encouraging Independent Reading in Summertime. Give us some ideas as we come into summer for parents and for teachers out there. What are some of the encouraging things we can do to help to help get them to continue their reading throughout the summer?
Oh, that's a great question, Alan. And I'll start with the teachers, since they're the ones that are almost ready to let loose of those kids. And then we'll talk about the parents for a few minutes. The teachers really, hopefully, have been working all year to be the models of good readers. They worked with what they call guided reading groups, where they've helped the kids learn to be better readers. And they've used lots of different techniques in their classroom. But if they have book lists that they know, and actually my blog, which is connected to my website, I have a blog for teachers and one for parents. And my teacher's blog has a list of resources on it, and also my parent one does, for extended experimentation, if you want to call it that. They can go and look on those two blogs and find resources. There's a great Teens Read book list for families and for teachers that gives them some great books that are pleasure reading books. And also, as they think about what they know is very important to their individual students, maybe one is very interested in sports, maybe somebody else likes to read novels. I remember when my son was in fourth grade, I kind of had a scary moment because all of a sudden he stopped reading novels, and I thought, oh my goodness, what's happening here? And in fact, he was gravitating to reading what librarians call nonfiction, real stuff. He was going to reading atlases and history books and things like that. So if they think about what their students love and then find those resources that will give them book lists to read. Also, 100% of them should be recommending that the students that they have go and be a part of the summer reading program at their local library. Every library that I know of in the country does a summer reading program, and they have a lot of wonderful fun events going on, movies showing and special people coming and doing crafts and magic and all kinds of fun things, in addition to encouraging the kids to read. And so that's a great place to make sure that, and maybe they want to have the public librarian come in or send some information to them that they can hand out to their students before they leave, so that they have that kind of tie-in.
Well,
some teachers have also started blogs during the summer to blog about what they're reading.
Oh, that's nice.
That's a great idea. That takes a very dedicated teacher to do that in her off schedule. But we have them out there. And so if a teacher hears that idea and think, oh, I could do that, it wouldn't take much time during the week, and the kids would be blogging back and forth, too. It would be a great way not only to keep them interested in reading, but also to keep them interested in writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the things that, as parents, we can do?
I think one of the most important things for families is to kind of come out of the academic doorway and not think about, oh, I have to get this list of classics and my child has to have a block of an hour every day in which they're reading, because that looks too much like school.
Mm-hmm.
And as we talked about at the very beginning of the hour, reading with your children from the parent's perspective really needs to be much more about reading as a tool for life. So if you're going on vacation, tell your kids where you're going, ask them to research on the internet or in a book or wherever they want to, what the fun things are to do in that area. They're going to be reading while they're doing that, aren't they?
Yep, I like that.
And yet it's not going to be an academic experience for them. Another idea is to find books that you want to read together.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
not in that snuggle and cuddle stage, so probably the read aloud won't work. There are a few families that have made it such a rich part of their environment that their kids do like to read aloud, some even past third grade, but that's less common. So, but if you're reading and they're reading and you're talking about it, you're still helping them practice comprehension. You're giving them time to read. You're giving them a chance to interact over a book. And then the last thing I would say in regards to families is to think about reading beyond just books. You mentioned magazines.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great thing. You know, you can buy, most magazine subscriptions are less than the cost of a hardback book for an entire year. There's National Geographic, there's all kinds of things out there according to, again, what your child's passion is. And I would encourage families to sit down, if you're a partnership with a husband and wife in the family or whoever, or partnering to raise that child, sit down for a few minutes over coffee or on a walk or something and say, what do you think Jeremy's passion is? Because they change.
Yep.
I remember my son at one time, his passion was dinosaurs, and then it was Legos, and then it was geography, and then it was history, and then it was politics, and, you know, that just keeps moving. So you have to stay in touch and stay as a communicator with your child in order to keep in touch with what they're really, really interested in. And they're much, much more likely to read something that's about a topic they're interested in than if you give them Anne of Green Gables and say, you must read this summer.
That's right. Yeah, actually, when you mentioned about the little ones and focusing on their passion, if I can share a little story with everybody. Many years ago, and I'm trying to think of how old Chase was. I want to say he was probably 4-5 years old, and we were flying cross country. And so as we got on the plane, and the captain saw him, and he made a beeline for the cockpit, and he went up right where the cockpit was. The captain smiled and put his hat on him and gave him a little pin that made him an honorary pilot. It was just a great experience. The captain was so nice, and then brought him back to me, and we went and sat down. And he said, you know, Dad, he goes, I think I figured out what I want to do when I grow up. He goes, I'm going to fly. And I go, really? I go, you want to be a pilot? He goes, no, Dad. He goes, I still want to be Spider-Man. I'm just going to fly.
He was thinking outside the box, wasn't he?
Exactly. But it just made me think of it when you brought up, it's knowing what their passion is and finding that and getting them to read it. Now, one of the thoughts I have is, what do you think about, because I've discussed this with other parents, what do you think about reward, you know, different reward programs where you're rewarding them for reading, either by the page or by the book. Give me your opinion on that.
Okay, here's the key to that.
Yes.
There is a great man who's researched motivation in children for 20 years and nobody knows about him. His name is John Guthrie.
Okay.
And what Dr. Guthrie talks so much about, which I think is at the crux of what we've been talking about today is the difference between extrinsic and intrinsic motivation. When you want to have something positive happen, we as parents tend to guide our children, and we tend to use different layers of rewards or punishments, okay? Consequences, perhaps, is a better word to use. But the key is that that has to be very temporary, because if you're forcing your child to do it and there's no payoff for them, that reward is going to wear off pretty quickly. If you can use it, if they're not a reader, and you can use it to get them started reading, then what we want to have happen is for them to get hooked, for them to say, oh, yeah, I'll do this. I had a friend of mine who suggested, as a matter of fact, and I thought this was an okay idea. She said, in the summer, my son has to read to earn TV time or computer time.
I like that.
And so for every X number of pages or X number of books he reads or X number of minutes he reads, then he gets an equivalent amount of time on something he really wants. At the point when you see that motivation waning, then you either have to come up with a different reward, or you have to hope that it's hooked him.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of a balance, I think, Alan, in terms of most families kind of have that already structured. If we're talking about older elementary, middle, and high school, you've already kind of got that system structured in your family. If you know that rewards work for your child, I would say use it as a temporary motivator to get them extrinsically interested. Then we can move them to intrinsically, which is internal. If that doesn't work, and I had a child that rewards and consequences really didn't work very well. And so different children are motivated by different things. What worked the best for Charlie, I believe, was that we always gave him, we never told him he could not read a book. If he saw a book and he was interested in it, we said fine. And so he was already feeding that little voice inside of him that says, I'm interested in this. Mm-hmm. I want to find out more about this. And as he became better at reading, then it was easy for him to stay intrinsically motivated, because it was like feeding a fire. You know, the more he saw that this is good stuff and this is interesting, the more he wanted to do it.
Well,
so I think the answer, as it often is not really black and white. You know, we all want a magic pill, but is to know your child and to know what works for them and doesn't work for them, and to know that whatever reward system you're using, it needs to be temporary, because you want to move them toward being intrinsically motivated to read. And you mentioned just one other thing that I want to go back to earlier, which is your example. Not all of us are the person that goes to the summer library program and checks out 30 books ourselves and we read novels all summer. There's some of us that do that. I no longer have time to do that as much as I like. But every day of Charlie's life, he saw Chuck and I reading. Every single day, whether it was the newspaper or a book with him or a magazine or reports from the office or a mortgage application or something, he saw us reading every single day. And we made it a point to share with him that that's the secret to a great life, to being successful, to being happy, is to find ways that reading can be that tool for life. Is it going to be a information-seeking experience most of the time? How-to books, you know, all those kinds of things. Sometimes it's a pleasure thing for some people. My husband would probably say that reading a manual on repairing cars would be his pleasure reading, or one of his pleasure readings. But that's okay. That's outside the box, but that's okay. So I think that that is just so, so important for parents to get the idea that reading as a tool for life is that message that you want to be sending to your kids.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and it's actually one of those basic things that we end up coming to in many of our shows, in lots of things when we're talking about kids, is it comes back to what behavior are you modeling? So I think you nailed it right on target. Now, do you have any other suggestions for motivating the reluctant reader?
That's a great question, because we really, I think, are talking to two groups of families. We have one group of families that's probably been reading with their kids since they were young, and they've kind of set that foundation. And I know a friend of mine was on your radio show a couple of weeks ago, Stacy Cannenberg,
yes.
author of the We Get Ready, Let's Get Ready series.
Mm-hmm.
And what she said about starting early is so, so important. But so we're talking to that group of families, and I'll talk to them in just a second. And then we're also talking to the group of families that maybe for some reason or another really wasn't very involved early on. And I want to tell them up front that there is hope for your child to be a great reader.
Good.
Just because they're not a great reader by third grade or fourth grade or fifth grade or middle school doesn't mean that they can't be a great reader. And so for struggling readers, I think it's important for you to find books that they can read, that they can be successful reading on whatever reading level they're on, that are not baby books, that are on the level that they would be interested in. And there's a whole series, a whole new genre that's come up in the last few years called graphic novels, which have a lot of illustration to them, but they are maturity-wise content for older readers. And there are tons of publishers that publish those. Most bookstores, if you go into a bookstore, you'll see, in some libraries, you'll see a section on graphic novels. And sometimes that's the hook. Because remember, we talked earlier about the fact that getting a good feeling about what you're doing is so, so important. And I hear parents say to me, well, my child says that he hates reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to those families, that's not what he's really trying to tell you. He is saying, I'm embarrassed to say this, so I'm not going to say it out straight, but I'm not very good at it, and that's why I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a very honest response. And my response to students who say, I hate reading is, I bet you you don't. You just haven't found the book that will turn you on. Let's go find it.
I like that.
So I think that's very, very important for parents. And for busy parents that are working a lot of jobs, don't have a lot of time to interact with their child, I would also say grab hold of your support system. There is one teacher. You may have a variety of levels of teachers that want to be involved at varieties of levels, and usually once you get to middle and high school, you do. You have some teachers that just will teach the content and that's all they're interested in. Then you have others that are really interested in the students. And so find that one teacher and have a conversation with him or her and say, I'm concerned about this with my child. This is my situation. I don't have time to sit down and work for hours with him. What can we do?
Mm-hmm.
Because they know, those teachers know of resources. Sometimes it's a volunteer tutoring program at the school. Sometimes it's a teacher that's willing to take on and work with a student. I know at the high school my son went to, there were before and after school tutoring sessions that were small group where the teachers were willing to come in a little earlier, stay a little late to work with students that needed help. So there are avenues to help those students even if parents don't have a lot of resources themselves. And that may also be true for families who are coming here from other countries, don't have a real good handle on the English language themselves. They need to be sure they're tapping into those school and community resources.
Now, I think you bring up a great point. And I think also, having been around teachers, most of them really appreciate it. I mean, I've listened to some of them say how much they appreciate a particular, you know, parent or group of parents that have come to them and said, we recognize, you know, that our child needs help. And in the same sense, I've also heard some of them say, you know, how disappointed they are, you know, when, you know, they, you know, when Johnny's struggling and they say, we've sent, you know, 15 things home for the parents to talk to us about this and we don't get a response. There's a great disappointment that I see in some of them, that they're not getting that kind of feedback.
Well, and I do think that that kind of goes into a whole nother realm that is so important to talk about, which is the relationship between school and home. And I will say this, every family has literacy. It may not be the academic literacy that their children are trying to master when they're at school, but they have a literacy. And so for teachers and for parents to come to the table focused on how they can help that student rather than worrying about the differences between what's going on at school and what's going on at home or the parenting approach of the parent versus what the teacher would do, and all those other things that sometimes muddy the water when you come to the table in talking together as teacher and parent. If you can get to the point where you're saying, let's talk about what his issues are and what solutions there are to those issues and how we can partner together to get this done. And I know very, very few teachers who will not be open to that.
And I would agree with that. You know, I just looked up the clock and it amazes me how fast the time goes in these things. I know that when I was on your site, I saw you had a lot of resources. I know that we've covered a lot of ground, but as you just pointed out, there's a lot of things we haven't been able to cover. Would you be willing to share, you know, right now, you know, for the parents and the teachers out there, the resources that they can go to, I mean, outside their school or their school district to get help?
Oh, absolutely. I would be glad to talk to them just a little bit about that. I would say, first of all, that when you're talking about reading, I mentioned the public libraries before. That is definitely, and also your school library, because the professional that's running that school library has a master's degree in library science. And so she's going to be a resource that's going to be really helpful for you. You can also get on the Internet, because there's all this great information out there on the Internet. You can visit author sites. You can actually go to the American Library Association. It has tons of book lists for kids and different places where they can go and actually view books that they might want to choose from, so that they can look and find something that's interesting to them. There is actually, let me see if I can find my reference here real quick. Yes, the theme this year for the Public Library Summer Reading Program is Be Creative at Your Library. And mm-hmm. The American Library Association website is www.ala.org. So that's really quick and easy to find. And my blog for parents, and actually I have gone in today, Alan, and put in some bullet points and some more resources on there for families. It's very easy to find as well. It's simply parentsandkidsreadingtogether.blogspot.com.
Okay,
and if they just put in parents and kids reading together into their search engine, it comes up, I believe, first or second. So they'll be able to find that one really quick and easy.
Okay, so that'll.
And also,
well, I was going to say that's going to give them a whole list of resources. What if they have a particular question for you? Is the blog set up to where they can put a question directly to you?
They can add comments there, and I just welcome those. I'm most happy to have people come and make comments or ask questions, and that's the thing I love about blogging. You can really get a dialogue going there, where you can get answers for people, and I'm very interested in doing that.
Well, I mean, I think that's great. You know what? We're down to about a minute. Is there anything that you would like to share, that you would like to get out? And again, I thank you so much for this time.
Oh, you're most welcome. I'm going to make a plug for a couple of authors.
Please
because
do.
They've got some great books out this year. If you're looking for books for your kids to read, especially when we're thinking about sixth grade and up, on mm-hmm. up into high school. John H. Ritter has a new book called The Desperado Who Saved Baseball. And if you have kids, boys especially, that love baseball, his books are always about baseball, but they're bigger than baseball. They're about life, and that's what I love about that. Deadline by Chris Crutcher. If you only had 1 year to live and you knew it, what would you do? How about that for a hook?
Wow.
And then there's also some classics. The Giver by Lois Lowry. That's a wonderful book for older kids to read. And they may have actually read that one in school and may want to be going back or have heard about it in school maybe and want to go back and read it. And then finally I'm going to mention there's actually a series of books, one written for adults, one written for young adults, and one written for children in a picture book format called The Three Cups of Tea by Greg Mortensen and David Oliver Raylan. And this is about a man who went to Pakistan. And, you know, that part of the country is in the news so much these days, but it really gives insight into what's going on in that culture and also into what these men did to set up schools for children in Pakistan. So just a wonderful, wonderful series of books. And really, if you've got a whole range of children in your family, you'd find one of those three that would fit for every one of them.
Kathy, I appreciate that so much. We are out of time, but again, I thank you for being here. I love the subject that you have. Everybody, again, if you have any questions, if you didn't get any of those websites, you can also send the questions to me at answers4thefamily.com. Thank you again, Kathy.
That's great. And then we'll just, they can always come to my website because there's a way for them to email me there too. And again, that's readingisforeveryone.org.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too, Alan.
Bye now.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.